Thank you, Joan. How about a hand for Joan, who I think... I think one of the main reasons that Pittsburgh has such an amazing, cohesive, incredible poetry community is because of these people right here. No doubt about it. And Jones, email. All right, who's been gardening? Huh? Come on. Snap your finger, keep it gardening. Yeah, here you go. All right, this is, I just wrote this today because I've been gardening, taking notes. We just recently just put up another arbor, so that's in here. Spring lexicon. It's all about spring. How about that? Two robins in the churchyard are loving it up, wings treading, spinning around the steeple, in this first real dusk of spring, then returning to earth, constructing their small bowl of shelter. Don't they know they're on sacred ground? That just a few feet beyond, a choir is chorusing against the body? Yet, they continue, now swooping and soaring above the cemetery, beyond our theology, singing. Season of cold's foot and intermittent winds, of mid-morning snow showers and then quick sun, season of shadows and tools, of rubber boots, tiny plants under grow lights, of the cardinals, on again, off again, love affair with our bedroom window, of red hollyhocks, soft pink poppies, peach honeysuckle, purple clematis, of pea-sized grapes, of grape-sized apples, sails of the swallowtail, sighs of the retriever, a distant hammering under patriarchal pine, of leaves lush and cobalt blue sky patches through branch openings of windy occasions. Here we can announce that our birth and death are elsewhere, out there with the out there, or so far deep inside us, they root us to this place and time. A child, I stood beneath petals shaped like tiny palms fanning the air, and wonder how those robins conceal themselves in all that daylight. I climb the backyard apple tree, its fruit lit from the inside out, to see if I could pet a bird. I wanted to be so close I could stroke an orange-reddish breast or throat, white, streaked with black, and stare deep into eyes spotted as the grass and reeds and mud they nest in. Higher and higher, my thin limbs straddled its limbs until, at the point I'd have to think my way down, I caught in the hollow where trunk smooths into branch, two so wrapped in each other's wings they couldn't fly away. Sunday night, children put to bed, our bodies in the bath, between happiness and the rest of the week. All day, we've cleared the ground, gathered branches, raked leaves, burned them in the center of the garden. And if this is where we are in the end, then shouldn't we bring all of ourselves, including our shadows, into the rhythm, the new arbor, the clematis, the climbing rose? We dig post holes, we balance and we measure, we set concrete and we hope it stays. Don't tell me this was foreordained. Don't tell me we've been going through the same motion, a wheel spinning in its recurrence. It's the sparrow and the about-to-burst lilac, those intermittent robins in the tip-top of the apple tree, the world, a place to start, the light insisting on its moment, the wind brushing the fallen blossoms across the shadows of the tree they float from, and ahead, all that bird love. Wow. I like that so much. I'm going to stick with the gardens. This is one of the shortest poems I think I've ever written. It's actually supposed to be a sonnet without the rhyme. In other words, it's got 12 lines. But my wife's been gardening up a storm. I'm like her slave. You know, she tells me to do something and I do it. And she...
Once a friend said, Phil, what do you do with the garden? And I said, I immortalize it. That's a tough job. This is called gardener whistling. Like synagogue singers whose psalms are never wholly absent from their lips, the gardener, softly, almost to herself, whistles her way down the rows as she plants the corn seeds, whistles watering the tomatoes, lips puckered in the spontaneous melody of the moment, whistles studying the poppies, whistles examining the vines for grapes, whistles testing the air for rain, whistles hoeing until dusk turns to dark, whistles the children to bed, whistles her calloused feet in the bath, whistles the robins and the mourning doves who weave her whistle into their song. That's pretty good. I got a pretty good from Jimmy. Thank you. That's pretty good to get a pretty good from you. Well, this is a selected poems. Wow. And I have to thank Christine Stroud and Mike Sims for this book. I appreciate it very much. Give them a hand. Whether you like the book or not. I like it, so I guess that's important. So I want to go back, since it's a selected poems, to sort of an older poems. But as we know, Ezra Pound, when he wasn't a fascist, said, poetry is news that stays news. Right? So we'll see. Most families have some dissent in it, right? Anybody have a family where people kind of like don't like each other? Okay, well, think about Jews in the shtetl in Europe, you know? It's like, they had to be there. But then once they got over here, they just said, goodbye, I'll you know, I don't want to stay with you anymore. So, anyway, no. This is called The Oldest Brother Lesson in the World. In the room without heat, the desk's cherry wood warmed his body all night into the pale skin of dawn, found his face pressed beside the book opened to drawings of the skeleton he studied through the noises of that house, the screams of our father calling him down to dinner. 10 years younger, upset with one crisis or another, I carved our name in the surface. But he said, furniture is alive, like us, if we allow it to breathe and pass it on the way it was made. Near an open window, he wore the scratches away with steel wool, his fingers precise, as if treating bruises on skin, brushed the stain with delicate surgeon's eyes, the wet streaks shimmering like roses in the sun. It was what he left me, smudged with the invisible smoothings of his palms, the imprint of his ghost ear, listening to the tree in the wood, what I listen for now, sanding my own splinters and chipped edges, the flaws he taught me how to retouch. Some say as brothers get older, they get more distant, meaning we grow out of our childhoods when we sat in the same waters and he rubbed my tender flesh with soap. This will last as long as memory lasts, and now that it is here written down, longer. And anyone who cares can imagine an older brother cleaning the younger as has been done according to custom throughout the centuries. It will last as long as the oldest brother lesson in the world will last. The story our mother taught us about the two sons who wound up wandering apart in two different worlds. Her own two brothers stopped speaking over something or other, and the years hammered the nails of their refusal harder into their wounds until one died and became bones that spoke less than the silence of the flesh. Does his body cry to his brother from the ground? Is cursing a brother the same as cursing yourself? Is looking into a brother's face like looking into water and seeing your own death? Are brothers two wings of a great bird? Does each carry inside of him the other half of the secret of how to live a righteous life on earth? I want to thank my former students for coming, because they didn't have to come because they've already graduated. So you're not getting any extra credit, guys. I'm sorry. They thought, oh, maybe we could just get a few more points. No, those guys are coming because they actually love this stuff. Wow, what great, thank you for coming. Wow. Okay, this next one is that was from a book called The House of Sages. This one is from Book of the Unbroken Days. And I was imagining, we're all kind of wanting these ancestor.com stuff, but this is kind of before that, but trying to figure out, I didn't know who my great-grandparents were, and so I made up a name for her, and I imagined that she would be a poet, naturally. So this is the poem I imagined. The famous Russian Jewish woman poet Terminovsky. If you found out your great-grandmother was a poet, if there was one obscure book you discovered one off day at the bottom of a dusty cardboard box in the corner basement room, covered up by pickle jars, slid behind your father's war uniforms, a volume slim as a small hand, the cover a faded blue, layered and sealed with mold, the pages tearing with a touch, the letters in Yiddish, and there's her name, Terminovsky, your name, before shortened by the authorities, the way they'd slice off anything unpronounceable. Terminovsky, the famous Russian Jewish woman poet. Her dagger type on the title's facing page, her face, the one you recognize from worn photos, but younger, a beauty, no babushka, a frilled scarf wrapped around the neck, her dark, thick hair flowing from beneath a tilted to one side beret. She got to look cool, right? A few strands loose across her cheeks, dangling from her lips, a cigarette. She examines the strange letters, lines, stanzas, wonders about the pressure of her fingers pressing the pen to the page, between the poverty and the pogrom, the praying for a relative to sponsor her over, the baking of the bread she had to peddle in the marketplace, having to worry about who would print and publish poems by a woman named Terminovsky, about being a girl in the shtetl, the smell of herring and challah rising, horses and wagons in the open air, the mud streets, the learned huddled toward the eastern wall, old men in black coats, how it shamed her to have to sit on her side of the synagogue. Even if she had the space, even if she had the time to save her moments in words, the way she kept buttons in a box and was assured of the support to write them all down. Now, she would have had Autumn House Press and editors like these guys. Wow. I got to read one more poem from Book of the Unbroken Days for for Jesse, because I read it at the Gist Street, and it was during a big thunderstorm and with big lightning. So I want Jesse, it's not going to be the same. But you remember the Gulf War, right? Unfortunately, Jeb Bush is saying it was a bad idea. Yeah. Wow. A little late than never. No, I don't think so. First day of spring in the second Gulf War. But this could apply to any of those. As the birds were singing, the bombs were dropping. You could hear the birds singing before and after the bombs dropping, not during. You could hear the bombs dropping in between the singing birds, and you knew the bombs were dropping and the birds were singing at the same time, but you could never hear both at once. They told you what kinds of bombs were dropping, but they didn't tell you what kinds of birds were singing. It was dawn in the ancient land, and then there were birds, and then there were bombs, and then there were birds again. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Jesse, for nice poem. I'm just going to do two more. You good? Okay. I'm going to go now to the Torah Garden, which was the next book that came up. How many poets are here? Any poets in the room? Wow, isn't that amazing? You all, especially my students, want to know how to get a job as a poet, right? Okay, well, if you didn't want to know, I'm going to tell you anyway. It's called Job Description Poet. Isn't it my job to loaf and lean at the table, to nap at inconvenient hours? Aren't I getting paid to speak inappropriately, to remain silent when pressed, to avoid meetings? Would you rather me be punctual? Would you rather me answer the phone? When the snow arrives, I'm paid to stick out my tongue. When the light bulb shatters, my task is to describe the dark. How many Jewish poets does it take to screw in a light bulb? Don't expect me to always return in the same choir. I'm sorry. Don't expect me to always return in the same chair like a dog to the same tin bowl in the corner of the kennel. I sleep when others are awake. I'm awake when others are asleep. Hunger is the most important ingredient in my diet. When you point to a plane, I'm staring at the moon. When you point to the moon, I'm digging the earth with my teeth. I'll sign your petition with my epic. Don't follow me unless you want to go somewhere else. Don't be surprised if I respond to your chastisement with an embrace, or if I claim paradise for my dung heap, or if I continue to talk long after the wind has spoken its last elegy. That's right. Thank you. Really, my pleasure to read with all these wonderful poets. So it's getting to know Kelly, knowing Nancy and Rick, who are great friends, and and so it's just wonderful to share this with you. So I'll close with another poem from the new book, which is the last poem. And my daughter is going to college, so there's the books. special Hemingway's discount at $16 a book. Yeah, does that sound good? Or whatever you want to pay, whatever you know. I'll take it. Page 60, that's what I want. Okay, Walking to Jerusalem, it's called, if you want to know how to get to Jerusalem. Here it is. You know those pedometers that you put on? You know, any walkers here? You put on pedometers, figure out how far you go? Okay, this is it. This is my mother-in-law's church did this. Walking to Jerusalem. Pedometer attached to her belt. Your mother, spry and strong at 80, joins the other Methodist church members in calculating the 5,915 miles, no matter what the weather, to add up all the way from Lionsville, Pennsylvania, to Jerusalem. They need not worry about miracles or pausing at the sign of the cross. They need not stop for security to check their purses for weapons. They need no visa, nor baggage, no money to exchange for shekels, no guidebook, no guide. They need no ancient tongue or prophecies. They are simply, day by day, walking, mile after mile, the sink to the table, uptown to the post office, down the block to visit the sick neighbor, Sundays to and from church. And when they walk far enough, adding up their pedometers together, they will arrive at Jerusalem and keep on walking. Thank you.